uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
Hello, cyber listeners. This is Motherboard Editor-in-Chief Jason Kebler, and I'm here with your normal host, Matt Galt. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how are you doing?
Thank you for giving me the keys yet again. Huge mistake, as always.
Typically, yeah. Precludes disaster, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was going to do, I was going to try to imitate you and be like, intrepid reporter Matthew Galt went to the Mr. Landlord convention, but there was a twist, something, but my dramatic reading is just, it leaves a lot to be desired. I made a TikTok the other day and I was reading off a script and I had to do it like 45 times. And so since we're recording this live on Twitch, I figured that I would spare everyone and would just dream of consciousness it out. But you are our guest today. What's it like to be in the hot seat?
It's very weird, especially because I'm still running the board while you're hosting. So I've got like half of control, right? So I can, yeah. I can like pull up an article or I can make sure that it's just you or it's just me, but I have no, I'm not steering the ship as far as the conversation goes. And that's very odd. That's very,
it's kind of like you're the captain still, like you have control of the reins, but I'm just like shouting at you what to do.
Exactly.
And you have to decide whether to listen or not.
Which is not unlike a normal work day.
Yeah, yeah. So we are going to talk today about who has power in society and who does not, notably landlords and the power that they wield and the position that they hold in our society and what that means. And the reason we're talking about this is because we sent you to the 21st annual Mr. Landlord National Landlord Convention in St. Louis, lovely St. Louis. You were there for 3 days at the beginning of the month. Matthew, what is the Mr. Landlord 21st annual National Landlord Convention extravaganza?
First of all, sir, it's the 21st annual MrLandlord.com National Landlord Convention. So the Mr. I won't do it too many more times. I will do it a few more times. But it's a landlord convention. It's a place where around 200 landlords from all across the country gathered in St. Louis at a crappy hotel convention center and discussed tools of the trade, built each other up, talked about the coming recession, and tried to sell each other things. And there were sponsors there, and Mr. Landlord himself, Jeffrey Taylor, was there leading the festivities. And it was just a place where landlords gathered, commiserated, and schemed. Schemed and really, almost from the very beginning, talked to each other about raising rent and how important it is to raise rent. And how they're all in this together and that they need to make sure that they're getting those rents up to market rates because COVID has been hard for everybody. Gosh darn it. And this this eviction moratorium has been terrible for them. And it's time to get those rents back up. And they noted, like, there's such a supply and demand problem with housing that it doesn't matter if tenants can afford it and they have to leave. Someone else is going to come along. So that is the broad strokes of what it was.
That is the broad strokes of what it was. I want to talk about why we sent you to the conference. I'm probably just going to call it the Mr. Landlord Conference from now on. Nothing but respect to Mr. Landlord, but it's a wordy title for a conference. And why we thought it was important. And then I want to hear all about it. So from my perspective, I feel like landlordism is having a moment in our society, for lack of a better term. Landlordism, obviously, one of the oldest professions, popularized, I believe, during feudalism. Is that correct? More or less?
That is correct. More or less, yes.
And still pretty feudal type society type system we have today. I feel like landlords have become a meme to some extent. Like they have become a symbol of class warfare, of income inequality, of sort of like the investor class, as well as just like a symbol of wealth inequality and sort of like labor and how many, many people work for a living. And then there's like an entire other leisure class that just collects money all day and watches other people pay their mortgages and watches their net worth go up. That is sort of like why I found this to be interesting. And I am on a subreddit called r/loveforlandlords, which is a semi-satirical or perhaps fully satirical landlord subreddit that is full of memes about, quote, land chads and land Stacys and their disgusting rentoids who are obsessed with Funko Pops and can't pay rent. And they consider like landlords to be a protected class who should be called actually housing providers because they're performing a vital public service, providing housing for people. This is a subreddit that is satirical, but is also sort of like hits a lot of points that we see landlords talk about in your article, where they are constantly sort of under attack. They're constantly sort of being maligned. They are the backbone of society in many ways. And without landlords, we would all be on the street. And so on that Love for Landlords subreddit, I saw a satirical post about the about MrLandlord.com, which is this website. So I think that sets the stage a little bit. I saw this, and this is not a satirical website. This is very much a website that is still up and around in 2022, year of our Lord 2022. And we saw that they had this conference coming up, and I was like, we simply must go. So, Matt, can you tell us who is Mr. Landlord and what's going on with his website?
So Mr. Landlord is Jeffrey Taylor. He's a landlord that's been in the business for 4 decades. Had this website stood up pretty early to hear him tell it at the convention. He had his children build it for him, or his son built it for him. And it is kind of the epicenter of his empire. He, you know, when I talked to him, I did get to talk to him personally for a while. He said that, you know, he does this convention. He still feels like he's a landlord at heart, that you know, he's just a he's a housing provider that is doing a good service for the community by providing a place for people to live. So this kind of began as his background is that he was a teacher. And this began as like a website that he began as a newsletter that he was sending out to fellow landlords for tips and tricks. He branded himself Mr. Landlord, then launched this website, MrLandlord.com, and began.
He launched a newsletter first, right? Like a printed newsletter.
Yeah. And I actually have, when you go to the conference, this is very exciting. You get.
I had no idea you had physical paper.
Oh yeah, I got a whole packet. You get a copy of the newsletter. So there it is. It's still happening, still in print.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. It's pretty like in depth. It looks like a nice little zine. It's well printed, but this is a place where like because there's all sorts of things that go into landlording that you don't think about. There's all sorts of forms and government regulations.
It's difficult work. We respect nothing but respect.
It's, it is, and it isn't because one of the themes of the conference was trying to automate as much of it as possible so that, you can not have to be completely hands off. One person actually said, you'll never get rich answering, phone calls about broken toilets, was a fun quote from one of the people. But anyway, so Mr. Taylor launches this newsletter, then launches this website. And the website becomes a place where he can not just like gather landlords together and talk to them, but also sell them things. Sell them things like, here are the rental forms that I use. Here are the techniques that I use to get rent out of people and like manage my properties. This kind of spins off into a series of conventions. Now, there is this 21st annual Mr. Landlord convention that I went to. But there are others. There are cruises that they go on. There are vacations that they take in tropical climates where they all gather and kind of do the same thing. And then, like, one of the crown jewels, I think, of this website that we found endlessly fascinating is the forum, right? And this is just this
forum.
This is what the forum looks like. This is the forum. I think it's probably you can barely see it.
So, I mean, this is an artifact of, like, this is internet archaeology. For those who are listening on the podcast, to describe this website, it's like pre-GeoCities, I would say, in terms of its aesthetic. It's like Yahoo News Group, white background, black text, forum threads are on the left side. The discussion area is on the right side, and it looks like either an emailed newsletter like News Group or something like this. And it's like, I went on the Internet Archive. This is exactly how the forum looked like in 1998, which was the first time that the Internet Archive has record of MrLandlord.com. But all of these posts are from like this week. It's like it's a shockingly active forum still to this day. And I'm going to read a list of a couple of the threads that we saw. Here are some thread titles. Quote, cancel rent movement. Quote, concerned neighbor. Reporting debt. Tenants from hell. Fake renter moves in. Use for poison ivy, question mark? That one was about how landlords should consider putting poison ivy on their gates of their properties so that people can't get in. And then someone posted, quote, some people are immune to poison ivy. I would use more traditional methods like razor wire. Another one called garnishment success, which is about wage garnishing for someone who wasn't paying their rent. Another called, quote, eviction reason, which is obviously like reasons to evict people. Another one called, quote, raising rent. Another one called immigrant application. And my favorite, this is my favorite, I think, quote, rude entitled renters. So it's like pretty bleak. Like everything else, there is obviously an online community to anything that has, to really any community that exists on the internet. And landlordism is a community. It's a group of people who are trying to share tips and tricks. It's just very interesting to see it on a website that looks as though it's a fossil.
Yeah, it was kind of like, that's really what one of the things that drew us to it, right? Was just how frozen in time this particular website was. Everything else has been, people update things all the time, and it looks like Mr. Landlord has just been kind of building on this website since 1998, to the point where a lot of the links, when you open them, it just launches another tab as a standalone WordPress stand-up, right? It's interesting.
It's really a rabbit hole and more of like a web than anything. Like, his web presence is endless. There's like a YouTube page. Most of the YouTube videos have like 4 views. There's, as you said, there's a website for the cruise. There's a website for the retreat. There's a website for something called the Landlord Boot Camp, which is a more intensive version, like training situation. There's a website for the forum. There's a separate website for a lot of the different forms that he has. He also has all these sponsors that expose sort of like a landlord internet, like series of economic and business opportunities for landlords. There's like a locksmith service. There's a debt collector service. There's obviously like various softwares for keeping track of your rentals, stuff like that.
Yeah. And most of those businesses were present at, like, almost every single one that you mentioned were present at the convention itself. So the way the convention worked, there was like the hallway outside of the convention hall, and they were all set up right there in booths. In the first day, Taylor spent a lot of time trying to push people to the sponsors and saying like, hey, make sure that you go out and talk to these folks, give them 5 minutes of your time, talk to them. And they had a system set up where you got tickets. If you talked to one of the sponsors long enough, the sponsor would give you a ticket, and they had raffles throughout the convention for various different prizes and things. You could win like books written by some of these landlords, because they've all got a book or a system or something they're selling, or mugs and like tats, stuff like that, right?
Right. So, Matt, broadly speaking, it's like I had preconceived notions of the types of people that would show up to this conference based on the forum, which is like, to be kind, an old school type of landlord, like ones who are spackling over the walls and calling it a repair, like stuff like this. People who haven't updated their refrigerator in 30 years. But so you went.
Yes.
What was it like?
It was, I tried to go as like brain empty as I possibly could going in. they really lived up to all of your expectations. It was kind of shocking how cartoonish it was. They were exactly the kind of people that that you expected them to be. Very, very obsessed with their image, making sure that that they're being represented well in the press. They're very concerned about government regulation, and very concerned about getting rents up as high as possible and not worrying about the morals or ethics of it. I mean, it was kind of incredible because basically the way this thing was structured was a series of lectures that, like, Mr. Taylor led everything and talked between every guest. And it was a series of lectures delivered by different people, either landlord or landlord adjacent, throughout the 3 days of the convention. That would run about like 7 or 8 a.m. Somebody is saying that we lost audio. Is this test, test? Did we lose audio? Okay. I'm so sorry.
I can hear you.
Okay. I think they did. I think I set up the OBS a little bit wrong. So it starts, the convention would start around 7. And it would run until 6. 6, they would break for lunch, and then they would come back at 8. And at 8 p.m., they would do brainstorming sessions. And these brainstorming sessions, Mr. Taylor would lead, and he would ask a question to the audience, and then the landlords would go up to the mic, and they would answer. It was like an information sharing session. It was more informal, but Mr. Taylor was always there and present and kind of ringleading the whole thing. And all of these different speakers that were happening between like 7 and 6... it talked for between an hour and 2 hours, and it was always about...
That's a really long presentation.
They were very long. They were very long presentations. I mean, the thing was running from 7 to 6 every day. You'd break for an hour for lunch, but you were there a while. It would be stuff like there was a guy, one of the scariest guys, named Mike Warren, who is not a landlord himself. But what he does is he buys judgments from landlords. So what happens is, let's say you're a landlord and you've got a problem tenant and you need to evict them and they owe you 3 back months rent. You go to the court. The court says, all right, this guy owes you the money. He has to pay you. That's a judgment. That's what that's called. The court saying that someone has to pay the landlord. In practice, these debts can be pretty hard and oftentimes even expensive for the landlord to collect on. Mike Warren goes and buys the debt from the landlord for pennies on the dollar and then goes after the original debtor. And that's like his whole business. And he was advocating things like in one of the most shocking pieces of the whole thing that really solidified a lot of this to me, he was explaining that it's legal in most states for you to repossess people's pets to collect on a debt because the pet is technically considered personal property. And I believe his words were, who do you think people like Fluffy more than their kids? So if you go after Fluffy, you're going to get your money. And to the landlord's credit, a lot of them groaned at this. But so people like Mike Warren would give their spiel. And then at the end of it, every single one of them, they had a system where it's like, you want to learn more about how to do this? Well, go to the back of the room, and for $1,997, a lot of the prices ended in 7 for some reason, I'll sell you
a discount.
Yeah, I'll sell you this book and this CD system that will give you all the information you need to know. And so there was this guy, there was a person that was teaching you how to navigate the different legal regulations around things like lead-based paint and bed bugs and medical marijuana and all the different state laws that you need to know when you're dealing with rental properties. There was a guy who would teach you how to use an elaborate system of trusts to avoid legal and fiscal and tax responsibility for your various properties. And I wish I could have gotten more of this guy in the article because he was extremely fascinating. One of the things that he would talk about is making sure that you name the trusts appropriately so that you scare people off. So it'd be things like if you are in South Florida, when you've got a bunch of rental properties there, make sure you name the trust that owns all your properties, the Medellin Trust, because if someone's looking to sue you and they pull up your trust, who owns this property, and they see Medellin Trust, They'll make a connection to drug lords and they won't want to sue you.
Right. Medellin being the city in Colombia associated with Pablo Escobar.
Correct. He said things like, when you're paying a contractor, like fix a roof, in the eyes of the court, somewhere, but the direct quote is somewhere between the shingles and the ground, they become employees. So, but if a trust is paying that person, then the trust gets sued and you don't. He said to make sure in the eyes of the law that you are a failure, because failures don't get sued, and use a system of trusts to do that.
Well, I mean, this is I don't know that much about this, but I do know that, you know, if you're a landlord or a property owner, you can take what's called depreciation, which means claiming that your house is depreciating in value because, you know, it's getting older and thus you need to like fix things. And like you can essentially pay much, much less in taxes. Like Trump was very famous for doing this, like on all of his properties and on the Trump Hotel and stuff. It's like you take depreciation and then you don't have to pay taxes. And I want to cut in here because we were talking a little bit about why we think landlordism is relevant right now. And it's like, obviously there's a housing crisis. There is just not nearly enough houses in the United States to house all the people who we need to house. And there's a severe lack of affordable housing. And there's obviously been just like sort of skyrocketing house prices over the last couple of years, which has trickled down to lead to really high rents. Like rents are at record rates right now. I think very recently, the average, I think one bedroom rental in the United States surpassed $2,000 a month, which is a record. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that, but I also wanted to say, like, to me, it seems like the people who are at the Mr. Landlord Festival, I'm going to call it festival now, conference, where sort of like old school landlords, which I already said, but it's like people who, many of whom have probably been in this business for a long time, where their families have been in this business. Like you write in the article that there's people who are like second and third and fourth generation landlords. There were kids there who were learning to landlord so they could like take over from their parents. But I did want to talk about something I've noticed as someone who's tried to learn a lot about money the last few years, because I didn't know anything about money. So basically the way that I did it was I just started listening to every podcast I could possibly find that was about money, and then sort of figure out like, okay, which ones of these make sense. And I will say that there is the financial independence retire early movement, which is this sort of internet-y movement in which you try to save as much money as possible, cut your expenses as low as possible, and then retire early, and you don't ever have to work again. And a core strategy for a lot of people in this movement, which is really just like an intensive saving and investing strategy, is to become a property owner and to become, to basically get a lot of rental properties is what they call them. And then Airbnb it out or rent it out or so on and so forth. And it's like, these people are tech bros, more or less. They're like very online. They're often posting like strategies on TikTok. They are podcasting constantly. There's like a financial podcast industrial complex where they all go on each other's shows over and over and over again. They sell ebooks about how to get your first rental property or investment property. They share information about how to do it, how to like make it look nice for Airbnb, how to market it, stuff like that. And it's like, landlordism is, it's just like a hot thing. It's something that people who make a lot of money, who like maybe have tech jobs and have some money to invest. It's like some people invest it in GameStop or Bitcoin. Other people just like buy a rental property in Indianapolis and rent it out. And I said Indianapolis as like just seemingly a random place, but like, no, there are podcasts that are like, buy in Indianapolis, because Indianapolis right now is like underpriced for multi-unit homes. It's like a good place to buy. And it's like, it's really interesting how these sort of like tactics spread throughout the internet. And I was wondering if that sort of talk trickled to the Mr. Landlord convention, because despite the fact that this guy has a really interesting web presence, they don't strike me as people who are like super online. The ones who you wrote about, at least not in the way that we typically think about it, where it's like they're branding themselves and so on and so forth.
No. And that was really fascinating. Actually, like that particular aspect of it, because he, like Taylor at the beginning of the conference, explained that he didn't know like what TikTok was. And he knows a lot of landlords are using TikTok right now, but he's not sure how you could use it to make money. There were a couple of younger people there that were kind of independent, that were trending towards that way. But this was very much old school. These were people that they were talking, they had like a big discussion during one of the brainstorming sessions about which website software to use and like, how do I get a website? And like, how do I put it up? And like, they hadn't heard of Squarespace. Like, someone had to get up and explain Squarespace to them. It was that level. There wasn't kind of that youthful energy until the end. Until the end, there was a woman who wasn't super young, but she's kind of fascinating. Her name was Jennifer Donnelly. She bills herself as the queen of Section 8 housing. For people who don't know, Section 8 is like you're getting government assistance for where you live. You get a voucher from the government that helps pay some, like sometimes all, sometimes just part of your rent. And what she does is she said, all right, she looked like, because landlords hate Section 8 housing. They have a negative view in their brains of what those tenants are. And they let Jennifer know while she was giving her speech that they thought that Section 8 housing was bad. Jennifer only does Section 8. And what she does is she's like, all right, this is an underserved market. No one wants to rent to Section 8 people. So I'm going to come in. I'm going to get a bunch of property. I'm going to get it nice. Like most of the Section 8 housing properties available are terrible. So if you put just a little bit of effort into them and make them nice, you can get tenants in. And a lot of times they'll be tenants forever. And she's like, hey, I was fine during the eviction moratorium because guess what? Those people weren't paying their rent anyway. It was all government checks coming to me. It was fine. And on top of that, I kind of looked into her presence. She is one of these people that is going on all of these podcasts, like you're talking about, and talking about this kind of stuff. And she uses a lot of technology that she was explaining to the landlords and was blowing their mind. Like she doesn't show properties personally at all. She has remote locks on all of her properties, all of her doors, as they call them.
Yeah, doors. Doors is what it's used on podcasts a lot. They're like, how many doors do you have?
Yep. So she has smart locks on all of her doors. And what happens is she's got somebody that's coming in that is going to view the property. Then she gives them a temporary code that works for an hour. They go in, they look around themselves, they leave. She's like, and everyone in the crowd was just thought this was awful. She's like, look, nobody's ever, maybe somebody's going to, you know, rip me off or break something one day. It hasn't happened yet. Like, and I save so much time and energy by not having to like go and show these properties. And she was forward thinking and was much less. She's in that Finn world, but was much less abrasive and scary as these, you know, more so than these old school landlords. And I caught up to her and I talked to her for a while. And she was fascinating and had didn't have super pleasant things to say about the crowd. She wasn't mean. But she's like, you know, these are dinosaurs, and these are the kinds of people that give landlords a bad name. All right, cyber listeners, we'll be right back after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, cyber listeners, this is Matthew, and we are back on talking to me about the 21st annual MrLandlord.com National Landlord Convention.
You sent me one clip that you took that was striking. There are a lot of striking clips and a lot of very confusing and horrifying charts and graphs. horrifying both in their content as well as their graphic design. But the one that stuck out to me was landlords talking about COVID and sort of the eviction moratoriums that were put into place both by the federal government as well as state and local governments. Basically, the theme of this conference was like, it's time to move past COVID. We're going to get over COVID. We're going to get back to landlording. And it's like, obviously, landlords didn't stop landlording during COVID. They continued to landlord. People continued to live places. But as I understand it, landlords see the eviction moratorium, which kept millions, at least hundreds of thousands of people in their apartments and housed in safe places, presumably safe places, safer than living on the street, during COVID, when a lot of people lost their jobs. They see this as like a deep moral failing of the government and sort of the system, because they are small businesses, in their minds. They're small businesses and they struggled during COVID. And all of these tenants got, not only didn't have to pay their rent, but also got stimmies. So they got stimulus checks. And then the quote is like, they went and spent those on doodads and we got nothing.
Yeah.
I guess doodads referring to just like gadgets and electronics and stuff like that.
Yeah. Somebody chimed in from the crowd at that moment, Marlboros and Budweisers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the general thought is like, landlords should have been getting, the stimulus checks directly. And the fact that they weren't was a great injustice. So do you think that this was like a commonly held belief during this conference?
It's deeper than that. It's even deeper than what you're talking about, that they're talking about in that clip. Because this was a question that I asked every single person I talked to, whether it was a formal interview or whether it was just casually talking. And to a person, weirdly except for Jennifer, every single person said that they were worried about the government changing the rules of the game because of what they saw during the eviction moratorium. The eviction moratorium to them was, you know, people struggled, but landlords struggled too, and it was unfair. And a lot of landlords are getting out of the game because they're afraid that the government could step in at any moment and just say, you know, this belongs to this person now, or the rules are completely different. And that scares them. That was overwhelmingly what they were afraid of or what they were worried about. Every single person I talked to, not worried about the economy, not worried about bad tenants, worried about big government authority, like screwing them, basically. Because they were like this, they saw the eviction moratorium as an overreach of power that was unprecedented. And if they can do it, then they can do it again. I heard that a couple times, that specific line. Oh,
right. And I mean, the interesting thing is a lot of these people are not small business owners. They're like medium to large size business owners. Is that right? I'm sure there's a huge mix of it, of people there, people who had, you know, one or two investment properties or whatever. And then you had people who had like hundreds of them.
Yeah, there was definitely like a couple people that just had one or two doors. Then I would talk to people that had hundreds of doors in multiple states. So it was really all over the place. And they had the it's interesting because they think of themselves, some of them definitely thought of themselves as small business owners. But a couple would start describing like what that meant. And like, you know, I have dozens of employees and I provide healthcare to them because I've got that number of employees and I have to. And they're like, oh, you know what? I am the big business actually in the area. There were kind of a couple that talked themselves into understanding that they were bigger. It was weird. It was like they'd never considered it. They'd never considered that they weren't the little guy anymore. But you know, when you've got branded clothing that tells you, that tells, that announces to everybody like what real, or what, not real estate, but what property management company you're a part of, and it's got your name on it, like that you're a bigger business than you think you are, you know? So the myth of the independent landlord, I think, didn't survive much scrutiny when you started talking to people about it.
Right. So I think we're going to keep covering this. Like, this was a big feature. You went in, you spent a lot of time living among the landlords and writing about them. But I do think that it's a really important thing for us to keep covering, specifically because it's like, landlords actually are pretty organized. They have, you know, different lobbying groups. Many of them are sort of core to the NIMBY movement because they don't want more housing being built near them because it could theoretically drive rents down. Meanwhile, we're entering what may be a recession or a bear market, or I'm not sure what's going to happen. That's for a different podcast, but it's like, it's not clear to me that rents are going to go down in the near term. In fact, they may go up as more people are priced out of homes in the sense of like, they're not able to pay increasing interest rates on homes. Although maybe we'll see some downward pressure on prices there. But I think in the short term, it's like probably more people are going to have to rent and we're simply not building enough homes. And I think it's like, it's a labor issue. It's a tech issue because a lot of this organizing is happening online and sort of behind the scenes. There's a lot of stuff for us to FOIA and so forth. And then it's obviously like a wealth inequality issue. So I think this is a really great piece. I'm very proud of it. Thank you for doing it. I want to end by asking you, what was your worst? What is the worst apartment you ever lived in, and was the landlord good or bad?
First, I want to answer Total Turtles' question, which you kind of did. Was anyone at the convention concerned about rental markets collapsing? No, they were not. In fact, multiple people said this was a great business to be in right now because rents are just going to keep going up. So there's that. So the worst place I ever lived in, weirdly, that had a landlord, weirdly had, it was a strange relationship. Okay, so North Texas is a very odd place in terms of all of this stuff. Zoning is very loose, and there's a lot of, but like HOAs have a lot of power. If you live in an apartment complex, it's going to change hands between like rental management companies three times during the term of your lease. You're going to go down to the office and it's just going to be completely different people you've never seen, don't have a relationship with. So there was that, but like the weirdest, worst place I ever lived was I rented a dilapidated McMansion with three other people in North Texas. And the impression that I got was that the landlord had inherited it or had gotten it as a gift or something and lived in Boca Raton and didn't give a shit. Now, this was good and bad because it meant that as long as like he got his money on time, he didn't care what was happening there. But anytime anything happened to the house, it was on us. Like, basic repairs were not going to get done. Any kind of problems with like the refrigerator, it was that all dealing with all of that was a nightmare. He was hands off in a way that sucked. Which is so strange because you end up in this horrifying relationship with this person where you don't want them in your life, but you have to give them money every month. And then they don't uphold their end of the bargain. You know?
Yeah. And you have very little recourse.
And there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do.
Take them to small claims court.
Yeah. What about you?
So I've had pretty good landlords for the most part. And by good, I mean, they like were responsive to our needs and charged like market rent, more or less. However, the first place that I lived in after college, I actually did live in student housing that had just like millions and millions of roaches in it. It was horrible, but I was only there for a semester. I lived in a group house with five of my best friends in Northern Virginia, and I actually loved living there because we were gross people and the house was super fucked up and we had a lot of fun there and they're still some of my best friends. However, we had this landlord named Harry and our stove broke once and he came over and tried to insist that the stove was not broken. Like the burner, it was a gas stove and the burners wouldn't turn on. And he pulls out like a huge wad of newspaper and lights it on fire in the kitchen and then holds it with his bare hand, like on the burners, and it lights, but it also lights like all this huge, he put like a whole newspaper there. He's like, it's as easy as that. That's all you have to do. And we looked at him and we're like, what the fuck are you talking about? We're going to burn your house down. And he was like, okay, I will get a new stove. And so he did get a new stove. However, there was one other thing about that apartment. And I lived in the basement. The basement flooded all the time, which is bad. We also had this thing called poop light, which was a light in the living room, a lighting fixture that was somehow directly connected to a specific toilet on the second floor. And when you flush that toilet, some of the water from the toilet would flood into the lighting fixture and pool in this lighting fixture. Thus, we like stopped using that toilet, obviously. But someone came over to a party and used it. And we had to empty the poop light. And it was one of the worst situations I have ever been involved in. We moved out very soon after. Very, very soon after. But
yeah, that's no good.
I think Harry was probably a pretty bad landlord.
So much of the impression that I got from the landlords was, it had it on a sign behind them: do less, make more. Right, put the minimum amount of effort in to get the maximum amount of returns. Get a bunch of college kids in your house. You're not going to have to worry about fixing a stove or changing out the poop light. Jesus.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's end it there, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like a great note.
Yeah. Sorry to all. Sorry to all for that. I'm Jason Kepler, the editor of Motherboard. I'm here with Matt Gall, your normal host and the author of Inside a Landlord Convention, where something, something, something. I don't know the rest of the title because the title on the site is actually Among the Landlords.
I think it's Inside the Landlord Convention, where rents are raised and schemes are hatched.
Yeah, beautiful. So. Beautiful. Check it out. It's a really good piece. Matt worked really hard on it. Thank you for listening. Thanks, Twitch, for being here.
And if you are listening to the podcast and want to see the Twitch live, go to Motherboard or twitch.tv/MotherboardTV and hit that follow button. Thank you so much.
Farewell.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.